B-Pod Studios.
Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds barred.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Sports talk.
I got it. All right, I got it.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Right back to your phones, as promised. George in the car. Go ahead, Georgie.
Hey, two quick points intertwined with each other, very quick. So, Angels missed on Butler, George, Kawhi, and now Davis. And the guy he gets is leaving, and then all these fans want to talk about assets. These annoying green teamers, all they talk about is the assets. And then when the player they don't get doesn't come here, they trash him. He's a loser. He's injury prone. If you don't think this is a disaster compared a year ago to today, you're lying to yourself. I'm sorry.
Okay, there's no question. Your assets have just about evaporated, unless you want to truly blow up your team. And unless you now your foundational pieces are Brown and Tatum. So if you want to tinker with that, now you're sort of blowing up the mix. But if you want to build around that, you're kind of sort of out of asset. I don't want to say totally, but is Terry Rozier an asset? Are you able to trade a restricted guy? I mean, there'd be a sign and trade, but it's not full value. Like, I don't even know the full ramifications, but that's not a totally...
No, the assets are Brown and Tatum.
That's it? But that means now
it's
you're...
Smart. Marcus Smart.
But now that means you're blowing up your team.
No, correct. Yeah, they're not going to... I don't think they're going to do that. The only other variable is that Memphis pick.
I was going to say the Memphis pick. But that's it. You know, heading into the year, you had Kyrie Irving in your back pocket. He had committed to being here. He was going to be here long term. That's one pillar foundational piece all set. You had Gordon Hayward coming back from that injury, who you felt was a... foundational pillar piece. You had two of the three pieces in your back pocket, and your assets were Brown, Tatum, Memphis pick, etc. Sacramento pick going into the year. Oh, God. You were all set for the now, and your assets were a Sacramento pick that was going to be high lottery, the Memphis pick, and Brown, Tatum. That Sacramento pick turned into Kaka because they got good out of nowhere. Kyrie gone. Hayward, damaged goods. And the Memphis pick now, that's really all that's left. So that's... No one did anything wrong, but those assets dried up pretty quickly.
Mike, they thought they were there. They thought they were right there. They had Hayward. They had Irving. They had the ability to make another move. They thought they had it. They thought they were one move from getting those three guys. They thought they were right there. And now they're back to building through the draft. That's where they are.
Oof. Paul in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good. What do you got?
Mr. Felger and Mr. Maz. I just want to know what you guys think about the upswing of the offense of the Red Sox. Jackie Bradley.
Stop.
Brock Holtz. Really, we just won the best team in all of baseball.
Okay, well, you scored two runs. I mean, you won on your pitching last night, Paul. But either way, the resurgent Red Sox offense behind Jackie Bradley Jr. and Brock Holt. Your thoughts?
Oh, God, please. This happens every year. Bradley starts to hit a little bit better, and all of a sudden, everybody starts talking about him like he's an all-star. Can I say this honestly? Like, I feel a little bit with this, like your thing with running backs. What is the obsession people have with Jackie Bradley Jr.?
The dipsy-doo dunkaroo in center field, man. The spinning, leaping grab every 2 months.
Are people seriously still waiting for this guy to hit? What makes you think at age 30, all of a sudden he's going to turn into Barry Bonds? What makes you think that? Like, it's unbelievable how people take the cheese on this guy.
ALCS MVP, Maz, blah.
He's a bottom-of-the-lineup player. That's all he is. He's so expendable, it's not even funny. Really, I find it comical.
Oh,
like,
so good.
The offense has been inconsistent this year for the whole team. But Bradley's the guy you point to? If you're relying on Jackie Bradley, you're effed.
Okay, we got a Mason Souza disciple. Here's Carlos in Taunton. Hi, Carlos.
Yeah, I mean, look at Kyrie Irving, and I'm assuming Al Horford's sick of working with a guy, and he's like, well, I'm going to exercise my option, and if they sign Kyrie, I walk.
Oh, I don't think that's anything
sure
to do with
how the relationship is.
Carlos, I don't think that's the case. You think Al Horford's waiting to see if Kyrie's here or not?
No.
And if he's here, I'm gone? If he walks, I'll come back because I can't stand working with that a-hole? I mean, I wouldn't blame him for feeling that way. I just never got that sense.
No, and in fact, no, I don't think that's it at all. No, in fact, I think it's more likely that it went the other way.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that if Kyrie was staying and they were able to get Anthony Davis, that Horford would say, I'll stay. We had a wagon. I'm in.
Al Horford might have his pick of a contender, a chance to go win a ring.
If I'm in his shoes, that's what I'm worried, and that's what I want to do. Like, I want to talk to other teams that legitimately have a shot where I can be the fourth piece, where not too much is going to be on my plate, but I can really contribute, and we can maybe win a title, and I can win my first ring. Like, that's what he should be chasing. So, Milwaukee, Golden State, you said the Lakers, something like that.
He's in a good spot now.
He is.
And just his game, is there a place he wouldn't fit on the floor?
No.
He'd fit anywhere.
I mean, he can do what Golden State does easily.
Yeah.
He, you know.
I wouldn't call him a transition player. So if you're, I don't know, like Sacramento. Okay, if you're Sacramento, what do you want Al Horford for? Unless you just want a veteran guy. But Horford ultimately can help anybody with, because he's so versatile and such a solid guy.
Rebounding the whole thing.
Sure.
The whole thing. I mean, he could have a good landing spot. He can make some money and get a ring. Why would he stay here just to babysit? Paul in Maine. Hi, Paul.
Hey, guys. Al Horford is a class act for sure. But the reality is we're not going to win a title with him here, and so good luck and best of wishes. Also, I'm tired of living in the past tense. What happened is a porking, it's true, but we might as well move on. And the reality is Giannis is in the division, and we need a guy that can match up against him, and Clint Capella is as good as there is out there. He's not a game changer. He's not a silver bullet, but defensively, I don't know. I think he's what you want.
Maybe. Okay, what if you have to trade Jaylen Brown for him?
Yep.
You would do it?
Straight up.
You would do it?
Oh, you're out of your mind, Paul.
No, if you're not going to trade Jaylen Brown for Kawhi Leonard, why are you going to trade him for Clint Capella? If you're not going to trade him and really, you know, trade him for Anthony Davis, why are you going to trade him for Clint Capella?
You're not.
And, oh, by the way, we've got Rudy Gobert in the Defensive Player of the Year Award, according to Mason Souza, and back there in the Time Lord.
No. Hakeem. He's Hakeem. He's not
Jesus,
Rudy Gobert. He's
Mason.
Hakeem.
What's the matter with you? But, I'm certainly not overpaying for that skill set. And I don't want to... just say Capella averaged 14 points a game last year. So he's developed some offensive game. But he's still not going to shoot any three. He's not going to shoot any three-pointers, and that's what they need with the Celtics. And if you just want someone to protect the rim and run the floor and defend Giannis, I don't know. I would hope you don't have to spend $15 to $18 million. $15 to $18 million a year and give up a real piece to trade for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the rumored trade had been Smart straight up. Like, you hope that Robert Williams becomes
the defensive. Okay, hold on. Now I have to think about this.
Yeah, no, that's close.
Smart straight up?
Yeah, that was what I was just searching around and found that.
Smart makes 12, doesn't he?
Yeah. There's similar players, but you don't have to hit it on 100%, right? Isn't it like 80% or something?
Okay, so.
I don't know what the number is.
So Smart and filler for Clint Capella?
No.
Oh.
I think that's reasonable.
I like Marcus Smart, but I might do that.
I'd rather have a big guy that can defend than a small guy that can defend.
Yeah.
I'd start with that.
Yeah.
But even that aside, like, I think...
But what's
that
really do for the team?
Nothing.
That's the thing.
Nothing. Like, you're still a 45-37 team that makes it in as the 5 or 6 seed and loses.
You match up better against the Bucks and the Sixers.
And you still lose.
I'm not so sure.
Oh, you lose to the Bucks.
I don't believe in the Bucks.
Oh, good. You lost to the Bucks this year.
I know, but you were a mess this year. Tom and Quincy, how'd you like the Red Sox last night?
Oh, it was fantastic, Mike. Honestly, but I was initially calling to talk about how they shut down Minnesota, which is a very tough task. But can I revisit a couple of callers ago about the resurgent offense?
Yes, you bet. Please.
The Jackie Bradley Jr. is one thing. He sucks. I can't stand him. But he mentioned Brock Holt. Like, the resurgent offense behind Brock Holt? Like, what the hell is he talking about? Seriously. You want to tell me that some of the guys are coming around and hitting is one thing. You know, you can say Vasquez is, you know, offensively improved. Brock Holt? Like, what?
People love
I don't even know what the hell to respond.
People love Brock Holt, Maz.
They do.
They love him.
They do. They love Look, I mean... I don't know what it is, the personality or what. He's another one. Like, Jackie Bradley, Brock Holt.
It's always Daniel Nava, Brock Holt, that fourth guy. It's always the
The gritty little guy.
Yes, the 10th player is what
Yeah,
I mean.
And I get it. Bradley's, you know, dynamic defensively, and Brock Holt is the little engine that could, and so you fall in love with the stupidest players who ultimately really have no bearing on who you are or what you're going to be, because those guys you can find anywhere. It's the J.D. Martinez's and the Mookie Betts and the Xander Bogarts that are going to decide where you're going, for kind of the resurgent offense. But it's true. Tom and Quincy's right. The resurgent offense behind Jackie Bradley and Brock Holt.
Oh, when he said it, I wrote it down immediately.
Oh, boy, the Miami Marlins can't wait to get those guys and put them in the middle of their lineup.
We reset, revisit, I should say, the Nick Caserio Patriots situation and update it right after these words.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Filger and Mathis. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So I just want to clarify one thing, and thank you for having me on, but I'm seeing it my column that I just posted like a half hour ago, I'm seeing it being referred to as a report all over the internet, and I don't think it's a report. I'm not talking, like, I don't have this direct information from Caserio or his agent. Like, no one's telling me, oh, Nick wants out. What I'm doing is looking at all the facts of the situation and analyzing it and using some logic and common sense to try to tell people what's going on. And what I think is going on is it's pretty clear that Nick Caserio wanted that Texans job, and the fact that the Krafts and the Patriots had to lawyer up and enforce his contract and file the tampering charges against the Texans, it's pretty clear that Caserio wanted that job, and the Patriots are basically enforcing Caserio to play up to his contract, so to speak. But
so that was Globe Patriots columnist Ben Volen on the radio in Houston, clarifying immediately that his great column yesterday was just that, a column, an opinion piece, and not a report. And again, I say it was a great story because it was great fodder, and it tackled head on, I thought, the biggest question involving the Caserio thing with the Houston Texans and the tampering charges and the rescinding of the permission to speak to him, or the rescinding of the request to speak to him, and all of that. Does Caserio want out? Does Caserio want that job? Does he want to leave the Patriots? That, to me, was the unanswered question. And Ben Volen, yesterday, post, Patriots Caserio wants out. He wrote, the Patriots may have won this round, but keeping Caserio isn't the real story here. The real story is this. Nick Caserio wants out of New England. Great. Specifically, he wrote, he wants the Texans job, even though it was more of a lateral move than a true promotion. And to prevent Caserio from leaving, the Patriots had to enforce a clause in his contract and file tampering charges. So, why had Ben Volen backtracking there? And I think people have ripped him for it, you know, like, oh, that was an opinion piece, not a report. You wrote that like a report. Why are you weaseling out of it? Do you have a thought on that, Miles?
Well, my guess is he might have gotten a phone call from somebody.
So, like, that's something that I think people are leaving out. And, you know, Maz, maybe you just don't understand the world as Maz and I do. Certainly more Maz, because he was actually a good reporter, as opposed to me.
Debatable.
But, you know, this is what happens. Something, you hear something from someone, you write it as a column, and then that person calls you and says,
what the hell are you doing?
What the hell are you doing to me? In this case, let's just say, I have no idea, I'm just, you know, for clarity's sake, so you understand where I'm coming from. Let's say Nick Caserio was his source, that Ben talks to Nick Caserio, and he knows how Nick Caserio feels, and so Ben writes this, and now Nick Caserio has to walk into to Gillette Stadium this morning, and Bill Belichick is throwing feces at him, and, you know, Nick Caserio calls up Ben and says, Ben, what are you doing to me? I gotta go to... Belichick dropped his pants and chucked poo at me today when I walked into the door. What are you doing? Or if Caserio's agent or his lawyer is Ben's source, the lawyer calls Ben and says, what are you doing? He's got to go to work with these people now. You make sure people know this is an opinion. This isn't a report.
So that's on Ben. And if that's who his source was, and he had knowledge of the situation and had actually talked to Caserio behind the scenes, he should have wrote that as like, well, I'm hearing, or I don't know. He needed to cushion that a little bit.
So certainly. All I'm saying is that could be a reason for the backtrack.
No, no question. Again, look, it's happened to me. You write something, somebody from the organization calls you and says, do you think you're being a little hard on this guy? Here's what really happened. And then all of a sudden you retracted, or you...
Well, but it's not just that.
Retraction's too strong a word.
It's you know, the way this reads, it reads like Volin heard it right from the Casario camp.
Correct.
That's a really strong thing to say that he wants out. I mean, you've got to have it from that side. That's how it reads.
And all these other outlets immediately pick it up, from Pro Football Talk to Sports Illustrated, and they start tweeting it and writing about it like it is.
Well, so, but maybe he does have it from that side. I mean, I would hope that he does, if you're going to be that strong with it, and that he has it from that side. Well, it would make perfect sense for me if that side said, dude, make sure that's an opinion. That's an opinion. You were just throwing stuff against the wall, because we've got to... Casario now has the dynamic inside there. Can you imagine the freaking daggers and the poop stares that you got, the poop eye, the absolute stink eye you get from Bill Belichick for a year? Never mind just the way Bill treats you. You know, you've been trying to leave. Houston requested him last year. So it's now two straight years Houston has requested permission to speak to him. The Patriots have denied it. This time, the permission or the request comes the night after Kraft's party in the backyard, where the team chaplain is serving as the double agent. And the Patriots now file tampering charges. So the Patriots are pissed. They have to be pissed. So not only are they shooting daggers at Casario, there's a whole dynamic now of, what do you trust him with?
Guy's office is probably in the equipment shed out by the practice field.
All of a sudden, your office is with the mops. It's, you know, right, at the event level, at the bottom of the stadium. Or it's like the assignments. It's like, Nick, come in here. We're looking at this hot prospect. His name is Skippy Magoo. He plays for East Alaska State Tech. Here's a plane ticket to Nome. Enjoy your trip up to Nome, Alaska. We'll see you in 2 months.
You can catch a connection in Juneau.
They could mess with him like you read about.
Totally right.
After all of this, they must be pissed at him. And so that goes immediately back to Ben Volin. If you're on that side, you say, Ben, what are you doing to us? He's got to work there for the next year.
So look, I don't know what the conversation was like, with, if there was a conversation between Ben and whoever he was talking to. Or if you're going to write that, what you got to write is, if you're asking me, comma, here's what I think.
Okay, so, but maybe he just had it that hard and he went with it that hard and his sources got cold feet. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's just, all these games are played. You know this as well as anyone. And maybe his sources called back and said, listen, man, what are you doing? They didn't like the way that it read. Who knows? Or maybe Ben just read the tea leaves like we did, or anyone did, and said, well, Casario must really want this job. Because if he didn't, there'd be no reason for the Texans. He could have easily told the chaplain, the double secret agent there, the snake in the grass, Easterby, no, I don't want the job. And then the Texans never fire their GM, never request permission, and there's no story. The whole reason the Texans fired their GM and requested permission is because Easterby came out of that party saying, Nick wants the job.
See, at the end of the day, I think his story is right.
Me too.
I think it's right. I think that that Casario wants out, and the Patriots won't let him out, and now they have a, you know, sort of a unique situation there.
And so the I lost my train of thought there. I just don't. How is that a tenable situation?
I don't think it is.
So you're just going to let the guy sit and rot for a year? You obviously aren't going to trust him with anything. Oh, by the way, the Texans aren't hiring a new GM, which is a tip-off. They know he wants the job because they're going to hold it for him.
Correct.
Yeah, they're just waiting it out.
They're going to let O'Brien and Easterby and whoever, some schmuckola down there, run the board for a year. So the Texans have obviously been led to believe Nick's going to take the job as soon as he's able. So if you're the Patriots, and I know this has happened to them many times before where guys have taken jobs towards the end and they just stayed on here. But that was always like, you know, Charlie Weiss took the Notre Dame job before he was done in 04. Romeo Crennel took the, was it the Cleveland Browns job?
I think that's right.
Before the end of the 04 season, and they played it out. And there have been a couple other cases. I don't know what Pioli's exact situation was, but he was to the Chiefs in 08. And
no, it happens with like coordinators at the end of the season all the time.
Yes, and I bet on some level behind the scenes, it probably happens with these front office guys. But that's at the end. After all the work is in. After all the work is in, all the scouting reports are in, you've made all your trips, all that, and then they go either right after the draft or whatever. Now this is when it all starts, like the whole scouting year starts. All these guys about to hit the road and go to the colleges and beat the bushes and whatnot and compile all the reports. Are you really going to trust Casario if you're the Patriots?
I don't think you can.
And if you're Casario, don't you sort of, Aren't you a little resentful of the team?
Okay, but this, again, this is why, how does it serve the Patriots to stand in the way of this, other than maybe getting a draft pick out of it?
Okay, to get a draft pick and to sort of prove a point, you don't sign a contract with us and violate your contract. Even though Bill did the exact, or tried to do the exact same thing with the Jets, just a little hypocritical, or maybe it's just the way the game's played. It's like, yeah, I tried to get out of the contract too. It didn't fly. I tried. I went to court. I hired Kessler. At the end of the day, Patriots had to fork over compensation. You're going to have to go through the same thing. You know, you signed the contract. You agreed. I guess his language is he got a raise. And then as part of that, the stipulation was that he can't interview or take another job, whether it's a promotion or not. That's it. You're ironclad. And he took the extra money and signed for that. Just like Bill took the extra money and signed and agreed to become Parcells' successor. Successor. But again, Bill had to go through it. He didn't win at the end of the day. So Bill's saying to Nick, I've been in that spot. You can try, but it ain't going to work. You're going to have to get compensation. And if not, you're just going to have to sit here. The dynamic of it, my God. Bill literally chucking feces at him as he walks in the door at Gillette Stadium this morning after reading this thing from Volan. Or if they're all in Nantucket together, they had dinner. Nick goes down there every once in a while. They have dinner planned, him and Linda. Nick.
You're not invited tonight.
You're all set. You're on your own.
Yeah, or you're picking up the tab.
All right. And so then Nick Casario's guy calls Ben and says, what are you doing? You're killing this guy at dinner with Bill tonight. Well, he has to walk into that building and face these people. So who knows why Volan kind of wormed out of it on the radio down there in Houston. There was some worming going on there, no question about it. But I think that does lead to a very, you know, interesting dynamic inside the walls. Is it going to matter? No, put that in that vast column on the right where it's not going to matter. Because as dysfunctional as this looks or as messy as this looks, do the Jets even have a GM right now?
You know, I don't know.
Honestly, I asked. They fired their guy a couple weeks ago. Have they hired the next one?
It's good. Not that I've seen.
I think they did. The guy from the Eagles?
Joe Douglas, yeah.
Oh, yeah, who the hell knows?
Eagles VP of player personnel.
Oh, I guarantee that. You, as bad as the situation is there inside the walls at Gillette with Bill chucking feces, that Nick, it's 10 times better than whatever bozo they just hired from the Eagles.
It's 10 times better than what's going on in Houston.
Or Buffalo or Houston or any other place we're talking about. Right? So is it going to matter? No. And if they withstood all the tension and the turmoil between Belichick and Brady, they can withstand it just between Bill and his personnel guy. So that ain't going to matter. But it is sort of a interesting dynamic. And I do wonder how important he is. You know, I tried to piece it together before about, you know, what draft picks he could have been responsible for versus not. It's impossible to tell. He took over in 08 after Scott left. So since 2008, you've had some whopping horrible draft picks, Dominic Easley, and you've had some grand slam home runs. Was he responsible for Dominic Easley and Bill was responsible for, call it, Rob Gronkowski? I don't know. Was Rob Gronkowski's Casario guy? Was Rob Gronkowski a Casario guy? And was Dominic Easley a Bill guy? Are we losing the real mastermind behind Bill? Or is there any way to know? It certainly wasn't Scott. I mean, as much as I like him and as good as he is, I mean, they survived that.
No, it's Bill. I mean, come on. Again, you know that anybody who works with Bill is never going to get credit for anything. Or blame, for that matter. To me, it begins and ends with Belichick. So does that mean Casario can't be a good GM if he goes somewhere else? No, it doesn't mean that at all. I mean, again, Dimitroff went to Atlanta and did a pretty good job there, all things considered.
I mean, Casario go somewhere else and be a good GM. You said Bill. Hopefully not a Freudian slip.
Oh, right.
To me, I'm interested about the reason I care about this, and does Casario want to go or not? And to me, I said from the first second, like, that's to me the story. Does he want out? And to me, it's all trying to piece together this game of how long Bill's going to stay. If Bill's gone and Casario's going to take over, why would he want to leave? It's just another piece to me thinking Bill ain't going anywhere anytime soon. He's going to be here for a while. And which leads to the next thing. Can we get our next Garoppolo now? Can we reset and redo that thing all over again, Murray?
I'd rather not. No, we still have Brady here. Okay,
but that's all. But to me, that's the importance of it. Casario, I don't care about him individually. Whether he's good or not, I don't even know if he's good or not. What does it say about Bill and his longevity here? That's what I'm interested in. All right, so there's that story. Reset to your phones on everything right after Murray's update.
Headlines. Celtics Al Horford declining to exercise his $30 million option for next season. He'll become an unrestricted free agent on June 30th. ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski reporting there is motivation for both Horford and the Celtics to work toward an agreement on a new long-term deal. Sacramento Kings forward Harrison Barnes also declining his $25 million player option. He's going to become an unrestricted free agent. Yahoo Sports now reporting that guard Chris Paul wants out of Houston as his relationship with fellow Rocket James Harden is now deemed, quote, unsalvageable. Ahead of Thursday night's draft, ESPN reporting the Knicks have declined a recent trade offer that would have sent the number 3 overall draft pick to the Hawks in exchange for the 8th and 10th picks. Rick Porcello pitched 7 shutout innings. Red Sox stretched their winning streak to a season-high 6 straight games. They beat the Twins 2-0 last night. Tonight, the series continues. Minnesota, David Price on the mound. Twins counter with Michael Pineda. First pitch is at 8:10. Headlines are brought to you by Marquee Jewelers. It's the summer engagement event with over 1,000 GIA-rated engagement rings in stock at wholesale prices. Pay no interest for 12 to 24 months. Find them at 80 Winchester Street in Newton or MarqueeJewelers.com. I'm Jim Murray for Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 Sports Hub. Next up, 8 at 5.
You're listening to Felger and Mass.
Doesn't always have to be ha-ha-hee-hee.
Oh! Love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hot in front.
Wow, what a battle in front of the net going on right now.
Here's Heinen over the line, high slot.
Tori Krugman. Perron still going at it.
Left of the net, back of the cage, Krejci. Turns, looks, centers. McAvoy shoots off of Chari's leg and wide. Krug came in and just hammered one of the Blues. I think that was Robert Thomas. Oh, Krug just ran him over. And Krug with his helmet up is giving it to the referee.
Well, Tori's an important part of our hockey club. Really was proud of his effort. Took to heart being in a top four role this year in the playoffs in particular, where he was going to face matchups on the road and handled them really well. The power play, the points, those things speak for themselves and have been for, you know, throughout his time here. He's a big part of our club. Have opportunity, you know, starting July 1st to open up talks. Again, the RFA market and some of our internal things will dictate the timing of those conversations. If somebody blew us away, you know, every player has to be looked at in that way. When you're an organization, you just have to. You're doing a disservice if you don't. But it would take a pretty unique opportunity for us to part with Tori. We think he's a big part of the fabric of our group. You know, he's kind of that next wave of leadership that we talk about in behind some of the guys that have carried that mantle for a long period of time. But he's an important part of our club.
Just a quick Bruins reset. We opened the day with the Bees. Sweeney spoke yesterday, Neely and Charlie Jacobs today. And you ask about, you know, if I just, I ask you again, Maz, what's the biggest need on the team? Do they have one?
I mean, I say it's a big forward, particularly one that can play with that first line. They need a top six winger that's got some size. That's what I think.
Because that front line has been shut down by big physical defensive corps each of the last 2 years.
Yeah, I just think that it's apparent to me now that they have trouble with physicality and size. So size and strength is a problem. It's what the one thing they really don't have on that line. It's an issue. They got to fix it.
Okay, so mine is 5-on-5 play. And, you know, but the overall thing is they have to get better from last year if they want to get back to where they were, because the road's not going to be as conducive. Simple as that. It's not going to be as conducive. So you've got to be better than you were last year, because I doubt you're going to make it through next year without having to face Tampa, Washington, Pittsburgh, or a team like that. Never mind Montreal or, you know, another team that, you know, gives you trouble. So they have to be better than they were last year. And to me, their clear deficiency when the rubber met the road was 5-on-5. They got smoked 5-on-5. By the St. Louis Blues. Smoked. And so maybe that speaks to the same thing you're talking about, that erection line, the perfection line, the first line, great with a man up, great on the power play, but 5-on-5? 5-on-5, David Pastrnak, Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron cost you the cup. I hate to be so bold. I hate to be so direct, but that group cost you the championship. You got everything else. You got the goaltending until maybe the very, very last, but Tuukka was good enough to win a cup. Your defense was good enough to win a cup. Your secondary scoring was good enough to win a cup. The first line cost you a championship. And to me, I'd take that seriously if I were the Bruins, to the point where you have to, you know, sort of refigure that line or add to it. And again, to Maz's point, that first line got shut down by big physical defensemen like they did the year before against Tampa. Like they had trouble with against Columbus with Werenski and Seth Jones for a little bit. Hell, remember when Toronto, who was the Russian defenseman that Muzzin, not Russian, Muzzin, the guy they got from the Kings.
Right.
Remember they put Muzzin on that first line early in the series and that they got to the Bergeron line too? So there's a little bit of a model there.
Well, and, right, because everybody knows it.
So the Bruins have to do something there. And they either have to add some size to that line, change the mix on that line, and how do you do it? This leads to Tori Krug, and you heard Don Sweeney talking about Tori Krug. Tori Krug is up after next year. He has one more year left at 5.25. Good number for him. Good number. However, on his next deal, if he makes the unrestricted market, you're looking at 8. Look at $8 million per on a long-term deal, something like 6 times 8 with his offensive production. Can you pay him 6 times 8 if you're going to pay Charlie McAvoy 6 times 7?
No.
Are you going to pay this guy more than Charlie McAvoy?
No, something else would have to give. Again, you'd have to either, you know, move on from Tuca or Krejci. And again, I'm not telling you I wouldn't move on from Krejci or from Tuca for that matter, but it would require another move. There's no way I think they're going to invest all that money into their decor. And not that I have a problem with it philosophically. I just think that it's a hard cap league.
Okay, so there's
a real cap there. Like, you can't just sign everybody.
Right, so here's an option. Maybe Krug gives you a hometown discount. You get to him now. And instead of 8 a year, he'll give you 6 and change. Because you're getting to him a year early, and he's horny to stay here. I read you the quotes earlier. Like, he's not even coming close to playing poker. Says, I personally love to get something done quickly. This is an important place in my heart. A place I've wanted to play my whole career. So ideally, it would be something that gets done. She says, that's been my goal from day one, to become a part of this locker room and this core. So he wants to be here. Take advantage of that. Get to him a year early, and hopefully you can knock $1 million off the price or something per year. And now you're paying both him and Charlie McAvoy in the $7 million range. It's still a little... I don't want to pay... Krug should make less than Charlie McAvoy. But that's one option. The other option is to trade him. The third option is just to play out the 1 year with 5.25 and let him walk for nothing. And that's not an awful option, because that's a great value, and maybe you can make another run at it next year, and you're getting Charlie Krug for great dollars. And you had a great run with him, and you just chalk it up like that. So he leaves for nothing next year. The only thing they can't do is play out next year and then sign him as an unrestricted free agent next year when they're bidding against 31 other teams or whatever it will be.
No, the money will be too high. Like, the money will be too high at that stage. Look, the idea of playing out the 1 year, I don't think that that's a horrible option. If you think you're a cup-contending team, then that's a viable option.
But treat him like a rental.
Right. Now, honestly, what would I do? I'd trade him.
And we both sort of agree, size up front, fill out up front. To me, become a better 5-on-5 team. Torrey Krug is one of the reasons you've become a little imbalanced to be a special teams team, because he's a brilliant power play player. And still sort of developing 5-on-5. If you trade Torrey Krug for a rugged winger, you're better 5-on-5, probably worse on the power play. But is that a trade-off you're willing to make? And I'll say in the same breath, Krug's 5-on-5 play has gotten much better. When they paired him with Carlo this year, his 5-on-5 numbers really improved. So there's a whole case to keeping Krug. I'm not telling you, I'm saying it's a close, close call. And it's a tough call. The only thing they can't do is pay him out of free agency next year. And pay him more than McAvoy. To me, that makes no sense, and now you're overpaying a guy, and in a real cap league, like you said, that comes back to bite you. So there's your Bruins reset. Everything on the table, all the Celtics stuff, the Patriots stuff, this, whatever you want, right to you, I promise, in a long commercial-free segment.
Felger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bored by listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Yeah, we always have to continue to look at how to make our club better. Regardless if you win the last game or not, you still want to look at, you know, what you can do to improve your hockey club. We didn't win the last game, so we weren't good enough. We have to look at how we can improve. Coming into next year, we have to learn from this year. We can certainly try to enjoy the year, even though it's difficult when you don't win that last game, especially game 7. To win it all, it's heartbreaking, really. You feel for the guys, everything that they put through throughout the whole season, playing hurt. You know how hard it is to not only get in, but how hard it is to get to the finals. But we have to move on from that and look at our club and see where we can make improvements.
That was Cam Neely today. It was a week ago tomorrow. Sort of a delayed reaction with me and the Bruins in that loss. I'm getting a little more pissed off by the day. It took me a while. It was just sad to begin with. Sad little Bruins honk. It's upset. Now I'm starting to get a little aggravated. I don't know. It's just a delayed reaction for me. And I'm not pissed at anyone in particular. The first line. First line cost you a cup. You got everything else. You got goaltending, you got defensive play, you got secondary scoring, your first line. David effing Pastrnak in the Stanley Cup Finals was -7. -7. Bergeron was -4. Marchmont was -2. And had some of the worst defensive plays you'll see. getting back into his own zone. You got everything else except your best players.
Minus 13 collective as a group, right? Oh. That basically means that every game they were getting you down 2-0.
Feh. It's a really weird way to look at it. It doesn't really compute that way, but just call it. Just call it Pastrnak was good for a minus one every night.
I mean, it's unfathomable, or would have been unfathomable to you, for you to think of that group in those terms.
And maybe I just want, you know, I don't know. Should there be some consequence there? Break them up? Add to it?
I mean, I'd break them up. I told you. I think you got to shake it up because in the postseason, they don't handle physical play well.
Okay, back to your calls as promised. Aon in Roxbury. Go ahead, Aon.
Hey, we gotta get rid of Krug. He's too small. Back and at it can totally quarterback the power play, and especially we're pretty lax down in prospect land.
So hold on, Vakanainen can quarterback the power play?
Oh, absolutely. You should watch him. You should watch him videos.
So look, I'm all for him being the next guy and him coming up. How about Charlie McAvoy quarterbacks the power play?
I don't think that they want to do it. Grizzlick, I think, would be the guy that you could maybe turn it over to if you're going to end up trading Krug.
None are as good as Krug.
Well, right.
But Krug's great at it.
Great. I'm willing to take the hit power play-wise to be better 5-on-5. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. There's going to be a sacrifice. You got to give something to get something. And if you want to get better 5-on-5, maybe start peeling off some of your power play strength.
And that was obviously a great attribute of this year's team. But as you saw, the deeper you go in the playoffs, the whistles get put away. So how much does it really benefit you? I'm with you. Like, I want to see them improve 5-on-5. That's why they should dangle him in a trade and see if you can get, you know, a big guy you can pair on that second line. They should make those phone calls.
Or first line, whatever. Some size up there.
I mean, that's what I want. I want size. I think they need some size up on the first line. That group, the pattern's established now. It's the same thing 2 years in a row. And none of those guys are big. So when you're going up against a team with the Blues, with guys that are that big in front of the net, it's just not going to work.
Paul in the car on the Celts. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So this perception that Kyrie Irving is the problem with the Celtics is all wrong. The problem with the Celtics had to do with Gordon Hayward. And go back and look at the stats. In the games that Gordon Hayward averaged 15 or better points, 10 rebounds or better, 6 assists or better, Celtics had an .800 winning percentage, including 5-0 in the playoffs. The last game, the first game that they played against the Bucks, they beat them by 20 points. With 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter, he went up for a layup, got knocked on his butt, and came back down on that ankle. And he was never the same after that. Look at the stats. Don't take my word for it.
Okay, well, I think it's a fair question, Paul. You know, what if you think Kyrie Irving stood in the way of Jason Tatum developing or Jaylen Brown developing, or what was a bigger detriment? The Gordon Hayward minutes and the Gordon Hayward thing or the Kyrie Irving thing?
Hayward. Hayward, because it affects those guys directly. Again, there's a, you know, there's a B cause and effect there. Absolutely. When, you know, having all three of those guys on the floor is difficult. Now, maybe that'll change going forward. But if you wanted Kyrie out there, and I'm obviously going back to last season, if you wanted Kyrie out there with Smart, well, then all three of those guys couldn't be on the floor together.
Something had to give, and that's what they want. That's how they started for most of those games down the stretch, right?
Right. So one of those guys was getting squeezed out. And I just have questions going forward about whether it'll be the same thing.
So Maz raised a great point, which is, okay, Kyrie being gone will free up Tatum and Brown, and you'll lose that dark cloud that hung over the team. And it should be better character-wise and chemistry-wise. But wait a minute. Was the issue really Kyrie, or was it the wings, Tatum, Brown, and Hayward all sort of battling for minutes and the young guys being resentful of the minutes Hayward was getting? And if that's the case, has that changed one bit?
No.
They're all still here. They're all still three guys vying for essentially two spots.
Yeah, and I still think that that one has to be figured out. Because, look, I know that part of the Celtics solution is, well, we'll play Hayward at the two. You know, he's a guard, the other two are forwards, and then we'll be small up front, but whatever. I don't think any of them are really guards. Now, Hayward, in theory, you know, he handles the ball well enough and he's smart enough and can see the floor to have the ball in his hands a lot and pass well, but he's a small forward. They all are. They're all threes, if you want to go to that metric. That's what they're all the same. Now, you can play two of them at the same time in the NBA now. We know that. But none of them are really guards. So I think they got a little bit of a logjam there. Now, look, they might figure it out. One of them might accept the role. But I'm just saying, until they do, after this year, how could you possibly think it's going to work out?
Okay, meanwhile, on the Celtics, I wonder if they're teetering on something. I wonder if the Al Horford decision has them teetering on the verge of something. And I'll tell you exactly what that is after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.